Well, thanks, Richard. Thank you very much for the introduction, twice. I'll take anything twice in politics. And thank you very much to CEDA for the invitation to come and say some words today. I know you're very... Linda's very strict on time, so if I get to 15 minutes, you gong me off, which I'm sure we will. But thank you again for the invitation to be here. To Michael Camilleri, the director here in Victon, Tasmania, to Melinda Salento, the CEO, Richard Owen, the chair of ExxonMobil, and again, I thank ExxonMobil's sponsorship today. We'll all go out the front and thank our welcoming party for ExxonMobil's magnificent job they do for our economy here in Australia. Could I acknowledge the Shadow Treasurer, Michael O'Brien, who is here, the Shadow Minister for Trade, Craig Ondaatje, Shadow Minister for Energy, David Southwick, the former Minister for Energy, Theo Theophanous. Can I acknowledge all of you, ladies and gentlemen? Again, thank you for having me. The election is but 46 days away, and that means in the next 46 days you'll probably have a number of politicians coming back to you around commitments, policies for growth, our economy into the future, and what some of the challenges will be for us as our state goes for the next 4 years with a new parliament. In that next 46 days, I can tell you the election will be fairly close, it'll be tight, it'll be fluid. We've never seen a circumstance where there are so many voters that are soft in how they may vote or undecided, and that of course breeds a very competitive race. There'll be polls where I'll be ahead, there'll be polls where I'll be behind, and to be frank, all of them will probably matter not one bit. If I believed all of them, Nick Xenophon would be the Premier of South Australia, and I'd be probably talking to the Federal Liberal member for Longman. But that is not to be, and our state is, as I said, in a circumstance for the next 46 days that will be very, very competitive. My team is united. My team is ready to govern. They come with a mix of parliamentary and professional experience. A number of us, like Michael O'Brien and I, have been ministers. Like David Southwick, come to the parliament with great experience. Like Craig Ondaatje, come to the parliament with enormous corporate experience. There's a number of us who have been in parliament for some time and some who have been new to the parliament who are onto the front bench, and that is about renewal. And that has bred what I believe is a very strong team to lead Victoria over the next 4 years. We do face in this state a number of key issues which are dominating the political and indeed social discourse for good reason. The first one, of course, being community safety and crime. Law and order in Victoria is an enormous issue, particularly in the outer suburbs and regional Victoria. It is that because it is genuinely an enormous and considerate problem, particularly in our growth areas, where violent crime is at record high rates in Victoria, record rates, and not abating. When the government chooses to ignore the crime wave and explain it away, rather than confront it and deal with it, as we should, then we will not solve the problem by ignoring it. My team has developed clear and consistent policies around reforming our bail system, our parole system, mandatory minimum jail time for repeat violent offenders, but also policies which are not punitive, such as a police in schools program to educate kids and the police and have a respectful first relationship, to develop Australia's first mandatory drug rehabilitation facility to get kids off drugs so that they don't have a life of crime, to actually confront the problem rather than ignore it, which is very significant and very important. Issues such as congestion in our city. Melbourne's never been as congested as it is today. No one could tell me with great confidence that 4 years ago Melbourne was a less congested or indeed an easier city or more congested city rather than it is, of course, today. Melbourne has never been as congested as it is today. You know, when you pay $1 billion not to build a freeway, it's no surprise. It's why my team has said, we will build an east-west link. We'll get on with our north-east link. We'll remove 55 intersections. We'll focus on our urban rail networks, such as extensions to the Cranbourne line to Clyde, the Frankston line to Baxter, duplicating the Greensboro and Eltham section, to actually build a transport network that is compatible with a 21st century road network to manage where we are as a city. And, of course, issues like cost of living. And as has been mentioned by Richard before, focusing on gas supplies to increase our domestic supply to put downward pressure on retail price. And we need to open up the conventional resources that Victoria has onshore in the southwest and the east of Victoria. It is no longer an excuse for us to say, well, leave it, legislate, ideology wins out over good economic policy, over jobs for our regions, over managing what should be a resource in a sustainable way that can benefit so many Victorians, both in a cost of living sense, in a job sense, and yes, with our system, a royalty sense back to those landholders and those communities, an Australian first. It's about making sure that our resources do benefit all of our communities in a way that people can respect and can be used. But over the last few months, I've noted that many politicians have started to talk about the issue of population and population growth, which is a topic that fascinates me and many other politicians' interest fascinates me. My team and the Liberal Nationals have been talking about this at a state level now for 3 to 4 years. We've been highlighting this as an issue and indeed have noted the fact that population growth and managing our population is central to everything a government does, at a state level in particular. Transport, the economy, roads, schools, health, land use, climate, water, it is all related back to population and population growth. It's why in Victoria we established 3 years ago the Population Task Force to head Victoria's the discussion around Victoria, to talk to industry groups, community groups, councils about population pressures and our state's desires. It's why 3 years ago we began a discussion around the decentralisation of population, how to get more people outside of Melbourne rather than cramming everything we have into the Melbourne-defined urban growth boundary. It's why we 3 years ago highlighted the pressures of unplanned, unmanaged population growth and its impact on cost of living and the livability of our city. So I'm glad that the federal government and federal opposition have had those light bulb moments to actually realise that population growth is an important issue, because it has been a considerable issue in this state for some years, and that's why the Victorian opposition's been talking about it for the last 3.5 years. Sadly, our political opponents in the Labor government haven't even acknowledged that population is central to these issues that face our state's challenges, or indeed some of the future challenges that will rely before us. Victoria is growing at about 140,000 people per year, and that is not just overseas migration. We're having more children. My age are having that third child extra when our parents weren't. We're living longer. We're tending not to leave this state like we were in the 80s and the 90s. And that began as a trend in September 1997 and has not abated. More than 90% of this growth, though, is coming to Melbourne, which accounts for only 74% of the state's population. Melbourne's now one of the fastest growing cities in the Western world. Our growth is unsustainably fast. Soon we'll overtake Sydney as the largest city in Australia. 20 years ago, I think most Melburnians would have rejoiced and thought that kind of status build was fantastic. Nowadays, myself and most Melburnians would say, you can keep it. We don't want to be that title. We don't want it, because the pressures that it has brought are great. In fact, the strength of Melbourne's growth could not be underpinned more than, I think, 15 years ago, Peter Beattie running ads in The Australian, boasting that Queensland would soon overtake Victoria as the second largest state. Brisbane would eventually, by 2030, overtake Melbourne. The southeast Queensland corner would overtake Melbourne as Australia's second largest population centre. Not only have those boasts failed dramatically, they still understate Victoria and Melbourne's population growth. But the contrast of growth and population management in Victoria is profound. Let me tell you that less than 100 miles from here, 160 kilometres, there is significant population decline in regional Victoria. Yet the city of Wyndham is but one of a number of metropolitan councils that is growing faster each year than the entirety of metropolitan Adelaide, the fifth largest city in Australia. Within 20 to 25 years, ABS statistics show that Melbourne will add the population of Brisbane to it. I'll repeat that. The second largest city in Australia is on track in the next quarter of a century to add the third largest city of Australia's population. And just note that Australian Bureau of Statistics have understated Melbourne's growth for the last 20 years. Think about everything it takes to service our third largest city in Brisbane. School places, hospitals, aged care, the sewage system, water system, electricity, everything to service Brisbane is going to need to be added to Melbourne, our infrastructure, to manage the population growth that is coming. And I simply ask this question, as an economy, as a people, are we ready for that? Daniel Andrews, my opponent, says that it's inevitable that we will get to 8 million people within the timeframes forecast, and I disagree. Nothing is inevitable. It's the job of government to find alternative ways forward. to build one rail tunnel and dip a few level crossings is not an answer to sustainably managing our population growth. It's not an answer to adding the population of Brisbane to Melbourne in the next 25 years. Population growth has to be well planned, well managed. It's a challenge that, like many areas outside of Melbourne, they would love, and many don't have. When I was the planning minister, I introduced Plan Melbourne to manage the growth of Melbourne, but also introduced regional growth plans to manage the growth of regions, not councils, regions. Those documents have largely been altered, politicised, ignored or cast aside. The result is that the government today has lost control of population growth, and we're all suffering as a result of it. Because there isn't a plan for population growth and population control, Melbourne is jam-packed and is choking. Population growth may have delivered a bigger economy, but not necessarily a better economy, where the benefits are shared across all of our state and regions. And the reality is that Melbourne is groaning under the weight of 2,700 extra people every week. That's driving up house prices. It's creating a scarcity of rentals and pricing people out of that market. It's seeing schools bursting at the seams with new students, increased pressure on our health services, putting strain on our frontline policing, creating infrastructure chaos as the government tries to race to keep up. It's like a dog chasing its tail, leading to cost blowouts, in fact $25 billion in just the last 4 years. Our rail network's being squeezed. Despite promising no new taxes to manage this, the government's introduced 9. Social pressures are growing because of uncontrolled population growth, with, as I said, crime on the rise, gangs roaming the streets, assaults at home, and home invasions, of course, on the rise. And importantly, our regions are missing out on the bigger and the benefits of a bigger economy driven by uncontrolled population growth in Melbourne, while Melbourne, of course, is taking more than 90% of that growth. That's Victoria today, and now I want to tell you what I want to do about it and why I want to get back in control of population growth. As Victoria's first Shadow Minister for Population, I'll commit to establishing to keep this portfolio in government. Some premiers take a portfolio with them. Jeff Kennett was the Multicultural Affairs Minister. Dennis Napthine was the Racing Minister. I'll remain Premier and Minister for Population. Population growth is central to everything a government does, so it makes sense that the person in charge should oversee this portfolio. I'll preside over Victoria's first population plan. This plan will see sustainable levels of growth in Melbourne and Victoria, designed to ease the pressure with a new population commission to plan for growth and find incentives to grow regions who desperately need it. The commission will also provide advice and direction on the use of planning schemes in the rollout and planning for growth at sustainable levels. Noting its ability to absorb population and grow sustainably, I'll have Victoria's first minister for Geelong. This person will preside over the new Plan Geelong planning statement, a plan to grow Geelong to a city of 500,000 people by the mid part of this century. Opening up new growth fronts beyond today's single growth corridor strategy of Armstrong Creek and preserving the sensitive areas to the southwest and Bellarine from overdevelopment. We'll begin a postcode 5220 strategy. Learning from the success of postcode 3000 here in Melbourne, the Minister for Geelong will preside over the development of this strategy that will be designed to bring greater urban density to the CBD of Geelong, our only north-facing CBD. Complementing this will begin the implementation of Geelong's first metro rail system running from Werribee to Warren Ponds and Bannockburn to Colac. Like the Hunter Metro in the New South Wales, the Geelong Metro will link bus networks and allow our second largest city the public transport system that's needed to grow sustainably with a high growth strategy. And beyond Geelong, a government I lead will also have Victoria's first Minister for Decentralisation in 38 years. Their plan will be to focus on growing the whole state. Committed to the government's long-term agenda of decentralisation, decentralising Victoria's growth, sharing the prosperity that comes from it, will be a central point of the next Liberal National Government. All cabinet briefs, infrastructure briefs, everything that shapes our budgets will focus on how we're growing all of Victoria, looking to incentives to grow the whole state sustainably. This minister will preside over the missing link for decentralising our state. A consistent narrative for each region, an understanding of each region's strengths and the marketing, the industry attraction strategies, the determination to make each region have core business strategies that can enhance and grow their local economy and jobs. Bendigo is Australia's first regional financial capital. Ballarat is the transport hub of Victoria. We'll bring VicRoads and maybe V-Line to be located in that city. Wodonga is a centre for driver education and training. Portland is a centre for renewables. Warrnambool is a centre for food processing and so forth. And importantly, as I announced last week, I'll begin the complete upgrade of Victoria's country rail network to build a European-style high-speed train network that slashes travel times and greatly increases connectivity and commute times and bringing Victoria the first high-speed trains in Australia. At 200 kilometres an hour, Australia's fastest trains will reduce travel time from Geelong to Melbourne to 32 minutes, Ballarat to 45 minutes, and substantially reduce travel times from the Latrobe Valley, Bendigo. But we'll also upgrade country lines as well as those four intercity lines. The Bairnstar, Warrnambool, Echuca, Swan Hill, Shepparton lines, all upgraded with new passenger stock and new passenger services to bringing back rail passenger services to Donald, Mildura, Hamilton, Horsham. New rolling stock will be ordered. Existing rolling stock will be upgraded. And what we know, of course, is that heavy rail is the centrepiece to implementing decentralisation, and that's why we'll invest in it. Ladies and gentlemen, nothing worthwhile is easy, and decentralisation is a long-term plan that isn't easy. But we'll have to commence this strategy now. Victoria can't wait any longer. We can't grow the next 30 years in the same way we've grown the last 30 years. As part of our Get Back in Control of Population Growth strategy, I'm today announcing that a Liberal Nationals government will fully review Victoria's taxation system to incentivise and encourage decentralisation of jobs and population. Employment growth is central to population growth. It's as simple as that. So this strategic review will be conducted by a panel of business and community experts, supported by a secretariat based in the Department of Treasury and Finance. The secretariat will also work with the newly established Population Commission. Their task will be to listen and visit rural and regional communities to understand how the taxation system is holding their economies back and provide the options that will solve those problems. We can't build our rural and regional economies by wishing it to be, so strategic tax incentives can play a vital role in decentralising jobs and population. Payroll tax, is it land tax, is it property taxes that will need to change? That's what the review will find out. It'll also look at possible federal taxation incentives. Information we'll then use to request the federal government assist with the challenges that Victoria faces. On top of that, we'll seek to work with the federal government to get new immigrants directed to rural and regional Victoria on a better and more efficient visa system. When my family came to Australia, they went to the Latrobe Valley. There were jobs, a new and growing community, and they didn't have to rely on Melbourne for the services they needed as new arrivals to this country. Ladies and gentlemen, only when we have a sustainable population growth will we be able to ease the pressure on Melbourne and address the real issues that uncontrolled population growth is bringing us. Our comprehensive plan to get back in control will share the benefits of economic growth, of increasing population. We'll build the better economy, the more strategic economy, a bigger economy, by opening up our rural and regional cities. We'll connect them with European-style fast trains. We will put in place real decentralisation plans to spread the state's economic growth fairly, to give every family, business or Victorian a fair share. Opening up the regions and regional cities means people will be able to access affordable housing and rentals while still potentially working in Melbourne if they choose. This comprehensive and integrated plan will see crime cut through people not having the social disparity and lack of infrastructure that exists in many outer urban areas. It will help with energy bills, the cost of living. A population plan to get back in control will ease the pressure on schools that are bursting at the seams in our growth areas. It will ease the pressure on frontline services of our nurses and police. And our comprehensive and integrated plan will see an end to the infrastructure wars. What is being built and contracted will be built and continued, rather than politics intervening in those disputes. But under a Liberal Nationals government, let me be clear, there will be an infrastructure plan with a European-style fast rail network, our urban and regional roads program, and the biggest expansion of the urban rail system since the City Loop that will be delivered on time and on budget. And by controlling population growth, we can plan for infrastructure so that we are not forever chasing our tail and playing infrastructure catch-up. So this election will be a choice, a very clear choice, about who is best able to get back in control of these issues and improve the lives of everyday Victorians. My contention, of course, is that a stable Liberal Nationals government, majority government, with a clear plan to manage our population growth is the best and most sustainable way forward for our state. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for allowing me to say a few words today. Thank you very much to CETA for your invitation, for ExxonMobil for your sponsorship and commitment to our rural and regional economies more than anything else, and the jobs you provide outside of Melbourne and, of course, here in Melbourne. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much.